We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. Big games keep coming, and big games we keep winning. It's Neil Shah with me. How you doing, Neil?
Well, yeah, I'm all right. Sitting on top of the league. 7 out of 9 in the what was supposed to be our downfall period. Doing all right.
Yeah, average. 7 out of 9, yeah, or 10 out of 12, you include Brighton. That was a tricky one as well, wasn't it, with the Brighton away at the Amex. Also joined again by popular demand, Garrett Krutziger. How are you doing, Garrett?
I'm happy to be back. I think I might be here for quite some time, considering the luck that I seem to be bringing to the Arsenal. So long may it continue. Seriously, it's just amazing, doing great.
Top man. I think we all predicted wins. I don't think any of us predicted a 3-2. I think it was 2-1s for you boys. I think I was a 1-0. Obviously, they dropped points in midweek, Man U, which felt good. I mean, it did feel good leaning into this. They were on a little bit of a winning run, and they dropped points late on in midweek. And, of course, they got a book into their very expensive central midfielder, who, of course, had to play. So there was the excuses were rolling out from Wednesday onwards for Man U. Their players were coming out. De Gea was crying. Ten Hag was saying, we've done it before, we'll do it again, all this sort of stuff. And we were pretty quiet leading into the game. You talk about seasons and moments. And we don't know where this season leads yet, but we do know we're halfway through the season, and we've hit 50 points, which is our best ever total at the halfway stage. Quite incredible. I think it's the 7th best total in league history, 5th best total in Premier League history. But for Arsenal specifically, if you go back even to the Invincibles, I think we're 5 points ahead of that. Like you said, you know, still a long way to go in the season. We still got to play Man City twice. We all know what's to come, not getting ahead of ourselves. But for the moment, it's an absolutely fantastic sort of midway point in the season. Neil, going back to moments, I mean, The elation I felt at the end of the game was really hard to describe. Usually at the end of the game, I'm just thankful that my wife gave me a couple of hours to watch the game and I'm back trying to help with the kids. But at the end of this game, I said, I need a little bit more time. Like I was like, I need to see what people are saying here for 5-10 minutes, because it was too much to take in. I don't know why that was, Neil, but it did feel like, it felt like a culmination of kind of everything that we've seen so far this season. And another big game that we managed to win, making Emirates into a real fortress at the moment. The only points we've dropped is Newcastle. Neil, your overriding thoughts, other than absolute joy that we had managed to get a win at the end of the game, it did feel like a significant moment. Time will tell how significant.
Yeah, massively so. And I don't blame why you felt the way you did, because I think you weren't alone in that one, Jack. I think most true fans felt it. I was absolutely stunned with him. Well, overloaded with emotion, actually, to say the least. I just couldn't stop thinking about it all night, all for the rest afterwards. Couldn't stop thinking about it. Couldn't stop looking at things, interviews, little snippets, post celebrations, what people were saying, as you said. I had to watch all of the interviews after the game. Sometimes because I've got things to do, I'll kind of switch off and move away from it and then watch it later. But I couldn't move from the TV, and my phone, because of the technology these days. Seismic, huge, pivotal, significant. You can use many words to describe it. I think simply because of, it was a real test of, I mean, we've been tested all season, haven't we? And we keep answering the questions each and every time. But there was something a little bit more significant about this one. For me, it reminded me of the 3-2 where Platt scored the winner, the death. Yep. And then that was a significant game, and we went on to win Wenger's first Prem, I think, in that season.
Yeah, 98, wasn't it?
And the double, of course. So, you know, who knows? There could be a little thing there. But I think it reminded me so much of that. It reminded me of the throwback rivalry between Wenger and Fergie, and the fact that, you know, I'd still say that that rivalry between the two teams and the managers was the best ever the Prem seen. It just all resonated for me. And largely because of the character shown by the players and how they were so mature throughout the whole game. I thought our trip to Old Trafford was one of our best performances of the season, and we lost because of a couple of lapses of concentration, a couple of moments of madness, probably the wrong move by Arteta by those mass substitutions when he tried to. I think he just panicked when he didn't need to. And this time, we went behind. We didn't panic. They came back from behind to equalise. We didn't panic. We kept going the same game plan throughout the whole match. It was very mature, very structured, very organized. And the players just kept doing what they've been told to do in a really positive way. And for me, it was those levels of maturity and attitude and character and personality from every single player on the pitch, I think got us through that. And, you know, we were talking about how one-sided the Spurs game was in one of us, you know, the one half in particular, the first half in particular. And I saw the same the last 20 minutes of this game. It was so one-sided. You know, in fact, in theory, if you think about it, their scoreline flattered them in the end because we were pummeling them. And this is a side on form. This is a side that has won, what, 9 in a row? 26 games when they've scored first that they've always won or they've lost.
Yeah.
And they scored first and we beat them. We ended their run and they're in form. And, you know, most other teams in the Premiership, if not all of them, would have been satisfied with a draw against Man United. We weren't. We went for the win. That showed what our desire levels are, what our hunger is. It was magnificent, Jack. And of course, you guys are going to talk about certain players and yeah, there was many that we can choose from. Just brilliant and so happy, can't tell you.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. Garrett, over. I know you got to watch a lot of the game live and then couldn't watch some parts of it live. That must have been agonising, but when you win it, you don't care, do you? You're just so excited about it. But thoughts, Garrett? Again, it just feels, yeah, very, very significant in terms of another step for this team, you know, this very, very young team. But what's your overriding thoughts after that win?
I think, yeah, you're right. I saw the entire first half and then the very beginning of the second, had to take my son to his soccer game. And then we rushed back to watch the last 10 minutes. And I was glued to my phone at the soccer game. I mean, I put my wife telling me, put it away. And I was like, you don't understand. Like, you know, and you're right, Jack. It felt like one of those, I almost hate to say it, but this one meant more to me, I think, than the North London Derby for some reason. And I couldn't really figure out why. I think it was kind of had to do with, like, against Tottenham, I know we're better and we've always been better and we always will be better. And it's just one of those things where it's a foregone conclusion where we play well and we dominate them. And like, it's nothing out of the ordinary, but there's this feeling when Manchester United, especially when they come to the Emirates, where it's kind of like these two old, very dominant figures in the Premier League are clashing, and it's a bit of a test of who's who. And it's been a long time since that's been the case, and it really, really felt like this was one of those moments that brings back like the old glories of Manchester United versus Arsenal. And it just meant so much, not only to me, but everyone I was talking to and texting throughout the game. Jack, we were going back and forth. Like the first half, I could hardly even like put my phone down because I was so nervous. I wanted to just keep talking through the game with somebody. And Neil, I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, we go down, we come back, we go up, we get pegged back. The maturity of this youngest team in the Premier League amazes me every single day. And not only is it the team, but the manager is the common denominator in that factor. And he's developed a group of men that cannot be fazed by an occasion. And I think they really feed off of Mikel Arteta's energy which everyone who thinks he's acting up on the sidelines can just shove it, because I think it's nonsense that people are and, you know, he gets booked in the game because of his antics, in quotes. But it's, you know, he's being made an example of for no reason. It's very, it's super frustrating to me. But nonetheless, wow, just an amazing game, amazing result, amazing scenes. It was just, it meant so much to so many people. And I get emotional actually just even talking through this, thinking about how much it meant and how we were able to get there. It's just fantastic. I wish I could relive it all over again.
I know. And hopefully, you know, there's more big moments to come, because it does feel like almost every game now, because of, you know, how we're doing and the fantastic start we've had, it builds, you know, it builds the emotion builds into it, and what's on the line builds into it. And every game is the biggest game, you know, as you go through it. That's what it kind of feels like at the moment. But it wasn't a game without faults, Neil. It wasn't like Tottenham away, if you like, which was pretty much a faultless display from start to finish. They had one or two moments, but we were totally dominant in the North London derby last week. This one, though I felt we were relatively dominant, the first half was a lot more even, Neil, and we went down to what was just a moment of brilliance. I mean, it was a mistake from Partey, but it was a mistake far enough out that you don't really expect to be punished. Rashford, I mean, a couple of people mentioning Ramsdale for that goal. I will talk a little bit more about the second one, which I think Ramsdale definitely has, you know, we have some concerns with, Neil. But, I mean, when you go down, like you say, it's a fantastic finish. But I love watching that now in hindsight, the players' reactions when we go down. Saka talked about it after the game again. He went, when the crowd cheer for us when we lose a goal, he went, you don't know how much that means to us. And I was like, wow, I don't ever recall that in all my years of supporting Arsenal, us being that positive as a fan base in the crowd. And I wonder what's brought that on. Maybe the new younger crowd that's coming in that's really making a lot of noise, Neil. Maybe the fact that we've got such a young team and we haven't been there and done it for so long. But whatever it is, it's just fantastic to see. You know, you go 1-0 down, a fantastic strike, but there's Odegaard, he's just swinging his arms, he's saying, come on, Zinchenko, saying to all the team, they're just like, yeah, we've been here before. And Neil, this is somewhere where we really were questioned under Mikel Arteta up until this season, going 1-0 down, not to big teams, just to any team. You know, you'd go 1-0 down and your heart would sink a little bit, because you'd be like, there's no way we're coming back, because we just don't do it. But we're answering questions, Neil, aren't we?
Answering millions of questions that all the negative idiots out there throw at us all the time. You know, Garrett again mentioned they're clutching at straws. They've got nothing. They can't question our football anymore. So they're having a go at the manager for getting a bit passionate on the sidelines. Oh, what? So all the managers of the past never got passionate, did they? Just shut up. Be quiet. And just be in awe of greatness, which is what we are. Yeah, that's what you need to do. You just need to keep your mouth shut. It just really boils my blood.
I don't understand, Neil, why Arteta is such a central figure in that discussion. When if you just like look back in the not so far past of the Premier League, you have like Klopp over the last couple seasons acted like an idiot on the sideline. He's breaking his own glasses and shaking his assistant coaches and jumping into the crowd. Jose Mourinho used to do knee slides all the way down the touchline in front of the away fans. And they're viewed as endearing. You know, I don't know what the...
Because it's Arsenal, Garrett.
Yeah, I know it is.
I think youth is a part to play there, though, as well, Neil. Don't you think, Garrett? I think the fact that he's the youngest manager and that we're the youngest team, I think that for some reason, media and particularly older people in the media seem to have a real problem with just him being, you know, very, very motivated on the sidelines. It's very odd. But again, it's creating all this siege mentality again, Garrett, that we spoke about last week, isn't it? From our perspective, as long as we don't let it overboil and take the negative from it, I think we can take a lot of positives from it. And if they keep doing it, I think it's going to fuel us. I don't know if you agree with that, but Garrett. But...
Yeah, it's bulletin board material. You know, that's what they call it, right?
Yeah, you've got the old tweets.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a motivator for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, in fact, the more this game went on, the more you realised that Man U were really a one-man team. Certainly in this game, anyway. I don't want to say that's what they've been all season, but in this game, it was basically get the ball to Rashford and see what he can do. And, you know, fair play to him. It was a fantastic finish. He didn't realise that there was a better player on the pitch that was about to outdo him in the second half, but we'll get to that. But yeah, when you go 1-0 down, I mean, even for me, I was watching the game, I was like, okay, we haven't created a ton, but we felt like we were in control. And when you go 1-0 down, you're like, okay, now this is really going to be, you know, it's going to be a tough game, this one. But I didn't panic as a fan. I mean, I was frustrated, certainly on text. I was like, you know, I can't believe what's happening here. Martinelli needs to do better with the ball. There was a couple of people off in that first half. Did you have any concerns that first half, Garrett? Obviously, I don't want to too much on the negative because there's so many positives, but Martinelli felt a little bit wasteful, almost like he just needed to breathe. And be calmer in the first half. Felt like he was just lashing at the ball without getting his head up. A bit like old Martinelli, maybe. And then Ben White as well. There's been some sort of mutterings about him maybe not being 100% well or whatnot. Whatever it was, though, he kind of lost his discipline at some point, Ben White. And it did, towards the end of the first half, start to feel a bit tetchy, like, hold on a minute, he might do something silly here. Did you feel that as well?
Yeah, I did. While I was watching it, I just kind of noticed it felt like we were kind of cheaply giving away possession, especially in our own half a couple of times. And I mean, I think I specifically remember Ben White just having the ball and playing it very softly, directly to a United player. Yeah. Yeah, it also kind of seemed a bit off a little bit. And I wasn't quite sure if it was like, I don't know. Yeah. He wasn't well, or we were misreading each other, which hasn't been the case all season. Like that telepathic communication that the teams had with, in terms of positioning and stuff like that. And I don't know, it didn't quite seem like a couple of the guys were up to the pace of the match, because it was so frenetic and the rate at which everyone was moving was so fast. And it seemed like to start off, Martinelli and Ben White were a little like a half step behind. It was evident to me, at least. But yeah, not to say that Martinelli didn't come around, because I think ultimately he plays a very big part in this team, where he essentially doesn't have an overlapping fullback ever in the
It's like him against the world, basically. Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah, but I think he's got the youthfulness and the energy and the exuberance to take that role on. But you know, when you have to do it consistently, maybe it wears you down. I just felt like Ben White mostly, and Thomas Partey, I think, you know, he made the mistake leading up to Rashford's goal, but I think for the most part, it's hard to fault any of the players, knowing what we know and how the match went. I think they were just kind of getting caught up to the pace of the game ultimately. Yeah.
And it was so refreshing to know that we had the ability to be able to rotate both those players if we needed to, whereas maybe even last week we didn't have that. Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, sorry, can I just finish what you were asking before about the...
I moved off you. Go.
Yeah, no, because I think it's quite significant that I think you're right in the sense that the fans tend to now just get behind the players. But I think that's I actually noticed that, believe it or not, around 18 months ago. It started changing then, very sort of slowly, and it's like kind of snowballed since. But for the last year and a half, the games I've been lucky enough to go to, even when we've been playing rubbish, Jack, the fans have not turned on the team like they used to. And they would keep singing, they'd get behind the team. And it's so important to have that. It's so important. And Saka, as you said, mentioned it in the interview. He said, we don't realise how much that helps. And it's so significant. Having that 12th man, if you like, in the stadium, especially at home. But I mean, the away fans have always been great. Always, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
when you go for an away game, it's a different atmosphere. It's different environment. It's different dynamic, because I think you're going away and you just want to enjoy the whole experience of traveling and being there at the game. But home, we've always been quite, especially when we've gone down. Just like the players' heads used to drop, the whole stadium used to drop. But now, even when we've been playing bad, which hasn't happened for a long time, especially this season, but the fans, the noise levels were up. But this season, oh my God, with the Ashburton Army and everything else going on, the drums, you got. I don't know if you've seen the videos of all the flares going off in the crowd singing like the ultras, you know, post game, pre game. It's just raised monumental levels, huge. And I think that is so massive for the whole squad and the team alike. And if we just touch on the first goal, you've got to give it to Rashford, you said. I mean, he's on form. There's not many players and goalkeepers in the world that could have stopped that. That was just a great strike. But of course, it was bettered by one of our players later on, you know, of course. But Partey might have been in error. If you talk about the second goal that we conceded, Ramsdale. But you know what? For me, guys, we are doing so much more to mitigate the small errors that are creeping into our game. It doesn't concern me one bit. Ramsdale acknowledged it straight away that he was probably in error. And, you know, he'll learn from it. All our players are not perfect. They will make mistakes, but they will learn from it. And that's what we're doing. We're still a work in progress, although we're top and 5 points ahead. We're still a work in progress, of course.
I thought Saliba and Gabriel were fantastic in this game as well. I mean, I don't really recall Weghorst doing much at all. And I thought Tomiyasu, in fairness, I think this was the strongest Tomiyasu has looked since, well, certainly since the World Cup, but probably even you could argue for the most part this season, because he's not really been playing much. And when he's come in, he's just looked rusty, which is understandable. He's not been playing much. Ben White's been playing out of his skin. Fantastic, right? But that is why you have a squad. And I thought that was really clever and intelligent from Arteta, whether it was tactical or because of discipline. I presume it's one of those, unless he wasn't feeling well. So, because I don't want to go into that unless that is something. But I thought, other than the first few minutes, Tomiyasu really settled well. I think there was a stat saying Rashford had about 3 to 4 touches after the 60th minute. Mm. And I mean, that's got to be credit to the whole team. But I think Tomiyasu really did well. I mean, he had that one chance in the second half, that Ramsdale, fantastic save. I think it deflected off Saliba's foot or something. But overall, I thought Tomiyasu, it was fantastic. And it kind of, again, linking it back to the Liverpool game, the home 3-2 win, Tomiyasu obviously shut down Salah on the other side, didn't he? And it kind of reminded me of that. When you've got a player that is on, you know, so at that level, and there's only a few of them in the league, Tomiyasu is the perfect, one-on-one defender, isn't he? He's probably our best one-on-one defender, I would say. Ben White obviously showing much more as an overall player, going forward collectively, supporting Saka, but I think when you want to shut a player down, Tomiyasu is our guy. A couple of years ago, it used to be Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Do you remember? We used to bring Ainsley Maitland. Do you remember? That's how far we've progressed. We used to go, oh, we're going to put on Adama Traore. I'll put Niles on, and they'll just put him on. And he would, you know, he kind of do a job. But now it's Tomiyasu. And Tomiyasu, the one thing he is just an incredible one-on-one defender when he's fit and playing well. And I was watching it, I was like, he won't get a lot of mentions here, but I do think he's done pretty well here to shut down probably one of the most on-form players in the league. But the equaliser, Garrett, was a thing of beauty, actually. What's your thoughts on Xhaka and Eddie? I thought Eddie was fantastic, but Eddie for the equaliser, his movement was fantastic. And, you know, I was worried about what we're going to lose with Jesus being out, but now I'm looking at maybe what we're gaining that's different. Yeah. It's amazing, really.
It's so apparent to me, the differences between Jesus and Kedia, and it's in good ways. I don't think that the drop-off, which is, I'll put my hands up and say I was very worried that not having Jesus was going to derail our season because of the lack of momentum and his ability and his work rate and all this other stuff. And while I don't think Nketiah closes down or cuts off passing lanes as well as Gabriel Jesus does, and Gabriel Jesus does it probably better than anyone in the entire world, so that's no slight on Nketiah, but Nketiah is such a hungry goal scorer. I mean, you can say whatever you want, and I know, that's not to say Jesus isn't, but there's something about the predatory instinct that Nketiah has that is unlike many strikers we've had for a long time. I don't know if it's his youthfulness or it's his desire to prove himself or what, but he really puts his body on the line time and time again, and he's always in the right spot making the right runs. He's like a much more clinical version of Olivier Giroud, if we're being quite honest, with the way he moves around the box. He gets around defenders. He's always first to the ball, at the near post, the far post, etc. But I see a lot of people saying Juan Bissaka is at fault for that, and maybe he should have known where Nketiah was better than he did and backed him better. It was a brilliant ball in from Xhaka, and I think the interplay between Zinchenko, Xhaka, to release him and put that ball in was fantastic. But the desire from, I mean, it was just who wants it more personally. And I think Juan Bissaka knew plenty well that Nketiah was behind him, but Nketiah wanted it more. And to a certain degree, that's what it comes down to. It's about execution. And Nketiah just executed. I mean, no chance on saving that. It was a perfectly worked goal. I'm not really having it that all of United's goals were a product of their own downfall. But I'm not having that. I refuse to not acknowledge how well Arsenal played in every single goal that, you know, we'll discuss in more detail. But like on this one, I'm not accepting the fact that Wan-Bissaka had a poor moment of focus and concentration. This was purely great football around the 18-yard box that released a player to play a perfect ball in, and a striker that made a perfect run that wanted it more than the defender. I mean, it's simple as that. And then it's 1-1, and I think the lead only lasted 5 minutes, and we're back off to the races.
Yeah, we responded really well. Yeah, go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, you were exactly that, because I had to watch and endure Troy Deeney on Match of the Day. So we had Martin Keown lauding us, of course, old Keown. And then it's focused. And then obviously Troy Deeney had his say. And he goes, yeah, you know, obviously, you know, great performance part, but, you know, all the goals that, you know, they conceded, they scored were because of Man United mistakes. And he was doing exactly what you just described. He was like almost blaming how rubbish they were in defense.
I'm not having that.
And I'm like, Troy, who? Who are you? Sorry, who are you, Troy? What have you actually achieved in your career? Why don't you keep your mouth shut, right? And just accept that we are now, because he's the one that always was making that statement, always, wasn't he? That how soft we are.
Yeah, and, gone quiet on that, hasn't he, recently?
The one time that, you know, he managed to beat Arsenal, you know, he's like making a big deal about it, whatever it was. And you're thinking, you need to just keep your mouth shut because you don't know nothing. And it wasn't because Man United were poor. Man United are actually, it was actually a good game from both sides, if you think about it. You know, they were, it was, at times it was a little bit end to end. It was a good show. If you weren't an Arsenal fan, it was good to watch as a neutral.
Oh, it's probably the best big game this season.
Yeah,
carry on, 100%. Sorry.
I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's compare it to how good the Liverpool Chelsea game was. Absolute dross, right? And then you come to watch ours. That's proper football for me. And I'm sorry, we outplayed Man U. We made those goals happen. Eddie's movement was good for that goal. It was very clever, as you both said. Sorry, Troy Deeney, you need to keep quiet. Thank you very much.
How did he get a job on television?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's got a face for radio, the guy.
Yeah, I don't know how he does. He pops up on lots of people's podcasts and stuff. I have no idea how he gets it. But it's an odd agenda to sort of say that, because, I mean, Saka's goal, which we'll get onto, I mean, it's 30 yards out, the guy. I mean, what are you talking about mistakes for? It's just a moment of brilliance, right? With Rashford, I know we talk, as Arsenal fans, we go, you know, Partey gave the ball away. But to be honest, he gave it away in a way that, in an area that shouldn't really be too dangerous for us, right? Mm. We've got two centre backs behind him, da da da. And I think he even felt that. He was like, okay, just get back in position. And then obviously, a little nutmeg in it, and it was banging in the bottom corner. But overall, you just look at that and go, that's a moment of brilliance. You're going to have those mistakes at times, because we try to play those balls, you know. So I find that, and the data doesn't drive that, Neil. The data says that this was a 3-0 game. That's what it says. The data says it was a 3-0 game and we made two errors, to be honest. That's what it says. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it says. It was a 25-4 shot game from us to them. It was an XG of around 3.0 to 0.05 for them. 0.5. It was a 3-0 game. And I think that's why, I mean, watching it, I never felt like it was a 3-0 game, but of course you didn't, because it went to 2-2 and it was the last minute when we scored. But to be honest, especially the second goal, it really felt like that was a sucker punch for us. Like, I was like, where's that come from? You know, just like a random corner and an error. That was the big error of the game that led to a goal, to be honest. I agree with you on Eddie, what you were saying as well, Garrett, but both you were saying. I mean, me and Neil being quite critical of Eddie on this podcast. Yeah. I can't deny it. I almost feel hypocritical praising him now, but I can't help but say, you know, I've been so wrong on Eddie.
Well, to be fair, Jack, I think that the criticism was justified based off of what we had seen, but because his sample size was so small, and I think he even said as much. He goes, months ago, and I'm paraphrasing, he pretty much says, I've never had a chance to show you what I'm capable of outside of the odd 5-minute cameo in a cup game, right? Like, what more do you want from me? And he said, I think he said something along the lines of, give me a chance And if I don't do it, then I don't do it. And that's on me. And then now look at him. I mean, he is our leading goal scorer, if I'm not mistaken.
Overall, he may be, yeah. In the league, yeah. I think it might be Saka still, or Odegaard, or neck and neck, but yeah.
Yeah, and one of the, you may be right, but and regardless.
I could be wrong, though. I could be wrong. I haven't checked the numbers.
You may be right, I may be right. We'll find out later.
Yeah. Someone's going to tell us.
But and you know what the best part about this game is? There were goals created out of the hail end from our academy. I mean, it's just – and Neil, to your – the point that you were making about the 18 months ago and the fans and how the overall sentiment around the club right now and the players. And I don't know if that factor has something to do with it where, I mean, essentially these are all very young men and we've known them since they were boys that are carrying us to glory on these huge matches. And I think the overall sentiment towards them is just through the roof. And there's like an impetus I feel on Arsenal fans to help nurture them rather than be so critical of them because we know their potential and they prove it to us week after week. So there's no reason to really be distraught or down when we go down because we know that these guys need the support from the fans, from the stands, to help will them over the finish line. And it's just, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it.
Yeah.
I think you're right, Garrett, but I don't think it's just because they're young, because 18 months ago we had the likes of some senior players like Lacazette, Aubameyang. Mm. It wasn't all young then. And as I said, I noticed it. I was really shocked. I can't remember which game it was, but we were so abjectly rubbish. And yet the fans were singing. I'm like, hang on a minute, this isn't normal. I'm not. Why are we going mental still? All right. And they were really getting behind the players. And I'm thinking, something shifted. Something has definitely changed. And we know why there was certain toxicity, if I never say that word, or certain distaste in the season within the fan base, let's say, because of those so called certain channels, which we never want to mention. And I think that's kind of, we've moved past that now. I mean, they're still there trying to be parasitic and whatever, but I think we've moved well past that now, probably a lot because there's nothing to talk about anymore because we're just so wonderful. But, I just love the way that, you know, there's now unity. I used to be so jealous, Garrett, of, you know, Newcastle's fans and even, should I say, them lot down the road's fans, you know, because no matter what, they would always be in unison and they'd always get behind their team and players. And I felt that that was one thing that was lacking in our club. But we seem to have got that now. And we've turned the Emirates into a fortress. It's, I think most teams, if not all in the Premiership now will be scared to come to the Emirates. Whereas before it'd be like they'd be rubbing their hands thinking, they'd be looking for the fixture. When we're playing Arsenal, oh, they're an easy one. Now it's like when we're playing Arsenal, oh God, oh really? and it's like, you know, I'm sick of hearing, oh, we haven't played City. We still got to play City twice. And I keep saying, no, they've got to play us twice. We are now the team to fear. Yeah. This season, especially anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, we've definitely been the best footballing team so far this season, but obviously there's a long way to go. But I think so. I watch a lot of City games and our games, and I think we're the better footballing team. But obviously, you got to show it for the whole season. So, but I agree with you there. I think Eddie's the second most prolific player in the league in terms of minutes. I think after Haaland. I mean, and Haaland's breaking all records, so that is pretty incredible for Eddie. When he starts, he scores basically, and now he's starting a lot. And it must be quite a relief off his shoulders to know that, you know, he's not going to have his plays taken away from him next week or that kind of stuff, you know. And that must give him a sense of like, okay, that, you know, the confidence, yeah, which is really, really good. And the credit I can give to him is areas where I didn't think he could improve. I think he really has in terms of his build-up plays, back to goal, that kind of stuff. The two goals, to be honest, I heard some mutterings, you know, of people saying, well, let's see him do it in a big game against a big team. And I went, I'll be honest with you, that doesn't concern me, because last season he scored twice away at Chelsea and he scored at home, I think, as against a big team. So I was like, that doesn't concern me. What concerned me was his overall play outside of the box. And is that enough for what, you know, the way Mikel Arteta wants to play? And I think whilst he doesn't necessarily spread his position as much as Jesus. When he does have to do it, I think he does it really quite well now, and his, I think his ability on the ball is outside the box is quite underrated now, and I just didn't see that. I didn't see that coming. But in the second half, I think there's obviously battles between these top English players, and I think, again, our top English player, who are, oh, at this point I'm arguing is probably the best right winger in Europe at this point in time, I would argue Saka is. I said this, I was wrong a lot on Eddie, but I said this about Saka about 18 months ago, and people, I was like, I think he's probably going to be the best right winger. I mean, he's just ridiculous. But even then, I mean, he is a big game player. He scored against everyone in the top six over the last 18 months. You name it, Tottenham, United, Liverpool, home, away, it doesn't matter. He's the first player since Henry to score in three consecutive games against Man United, I think that is. There's only one other, Henry, him, and another player that I couldn't remember.
Lundberg,
of course, scored on his debut, didn't he, against United, but in three consecutive games. But it wasn't just a goal. Garrett, talk about the goal, but it was his ability, just his constant ability, just say, give me the ball. And he had Luke Shaw on toast, really, but he had their whole team on it. But that goal, I just couldn't believe he took the shot on, but then it's
Kaka
Saka, isn't it?
It was like an unprecedented attempt from him, and the fact that he has the confidence to take it on says so much about where he's at in his development. I don't even want to say development. I mean, he has arrived, right? And now it's just how much he can build off of this. He's, to me, he's still a young player, but he should not be looked at like some young player anymore. I mean, he's an absolute star, this guy. And we will go as far as Bukayo Saka can take us. And the sky's the limit for us with him in our squad, because of his ability, he changes games. No one can stop him, even though everyone knows what he wants to do. I mean, it's just fantastic stuff. I mean, like Luke Shaw is looking at him the entire time saying, this guy's going to go left, but I can't stop him from going left. And then De Gea should see that he's giving me the eyes. He's going left. He's going to take a shot on, but it doesn't matter. I can't get a hand to it. I mean, it's amazing. That's probably the best goal he's ever scored for us.
I think he said as much. Yeah,
he did. I mean, makes sense. It's fantastic. And my one friend that was texting me the updates, this is the one moment that I missed live, which is very regrettable. But he was just texting me expletives, going crazy. He said goal of the season, best goal of Saka's career, all this other stuff. And I went back and watched it, and I just couldn't believe the precision. It's unbelievable. 30 yards out, cutting in, guy on his hip, puts it right in the bottom corner where no one else can touch it. I mean, just amazing. There's a camera angle, I think, where you see it coming in from the outside of the post and going right back in. And just what a way to take a lead. You know, I mean, it really just set the tone for the rest of the second half.
Yeah. And Garrett, we know it wasn't no fluke because he almost did it again.
I know. If it wasn't for a deflection, he would have done it twice.
Very unlucky. Very unlucky.
No, I mean, it's just... He is otherworldly right now. And like, you're totally right, Jack. I mean, another right winger, definitely in the Premier League. No one's better than him in England. And in Europe, I mean,
The world.
Yeah, the world, of course.
And that's what's so hard is it, I mean, we'll do our little 5-minute transfer segment again, but obviously the club is looking to support him, rightly. And we don't, in fairness, even no matter what we've done with the signings, we don't really have a direct, clear support for him if, you know, he needs to be rotated out or something happens, touch wood, you know, it doesn't. But it's so hard. How do you, someone at that level that is that good, it's very, very difficult to know what type of player and how good a player you bring in is to basically play second fiddle to the what is, you know, effectively one of the best right wingers in Europe at the moment. But I love it, just like Odegaard last week, how these players now are just taking it on their shoulders in big moments, you know. And that was one thing, a few weeks back, I was thinking, okay, I remember when we won the league before. At times, you know, Henri would just grab the ball from 30 yards out and ping it top bins when things weren't going well. And I was thinking, how many do we have that can do that? And then the Odegaard and Saka moments happen in the last 2 weeks. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm like, all right. And I think what they're seeing is that they're taking the responsibility of the team on their shoulders, you know. And, you know, obviously we're doing it collectively, but big players handle big moments and they produce in big moments as well, you know. And, this, you know, Zinchenko's another one, which we'll get to, but certain big players just really show up on the big occasions. And those players, Lundberg was one of those, right? Like, you just knew that Lundberg, even though he wasn't necessarily even our best player on paper in that Invincible team, you were like, he's going to show up today and he's going to do something special. And he would do. And it wasn't always the Thierry Henry that would do it in the big games at times.
Pires as well used to do
Pires,
it.
Pires, yeah, always. You, North London Derby, you'd be like, Pires is going to score today. You could feel it. A will toward, you know, big moments, you know. And, you know, it's hard
to... another one of those players, Jack, that hasn't even hardly suited up this season. Smith Rowe,
yeah.
I mean, he's a big game player too. Scores big goals.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
He's going to be huge. I know we have those worries about having a right winger to relieve Saka from some time to, you know, take his legs up and make sure he doesn't get run into the ground. But we haven't even brought in Emil Smith Rowe yet. That we haven't seen how that's going to impact the rotation of the squad. And I think you look at guys that were at the levels of like Rafinha and Mudrik and, you know, all those other guys, and they wouldn't, I don't, Mudrik maybe a bit more of a left winger, but a winger regardless. But I think it's going to be someone kind of cut from that cloth, promising, exciting, yeah, but not, no one's at the level of Saka. They have to understand that they're really going to be a squad player. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, look at what Tomiyasu and Ben White are dealing with, Kieran Tierney and Zinchenko. I mean, both of those players in their own right are probably starting for almost any other club in the Premier League.
Yeah, and we can't. Not, I mean, I'm not saying we've got there yet, but
yeah.
If you look at how the drop off from Liverpool, they never really supported their top players right, did they? I mean, look at Mane and Salah. Like, who was a direct replacement for Salah through the years? And now he's dropped off massively. Maybe he comes back, I don't know. But he's dropped off massively, right? And we don't want that to happen to Saka. Obviously, we're looking way into the distant future and stuff like that. But the way he just grabbed the game, Garrett, and what I love about him as well is sometimes, you know, a lot of people, wingers, like compare him to Pepe, they'll get the ball and they'll just always try to do their man. Sometimes Martinelli's a bit guilty of this, right? Just always trying to. Saka's the opposite. He doesn't care if he does his man, doesn't do his man for 10 minutes and plays it inwards, sideways. But when he's ready to, he'll either do his man or sometimes he'll just bypass them completely and go infield and go, I'm just going to move away from you and go on to your centre back. And I love his sort of humbleness to not have to think, I have to take on my man every time I get the ball. And that's not what makes a top winger. And I used to feel so frustrated with Pepe. Every time he got the ball, we felt he had to do two or three players. And I was like, that's not what it's about when you're a winger. Sometimes it's about just giving the ball and moving and chopping off. And, you know, and I think Saka's just so intelligent. His movement, his ability to receive the ball in, he is just such an intelligent player for his age. And His calmness, you know, his calmness is huge. Arteta talked about Trossard when he came on and his ability. They were like, what do you think of his cameo? And he was like, his ability to be calm really helped us. And I thought that was really significant. And it shows the opposition, or the difference, sorry, in maybe Martinelli and Trossard and what they are, because they are different players. They definitely look like they are different players. But We at 2-1 up, you know, you really felt like maybe we were going to go on and make it 3-4, and we probably deserve to. Now, I guess we'll touch on a couple of the negatives, and we talked about Ben White a little bit, and I don't think any of us have overriding concerns. I think it was a very good move by the manager. But the one thing Ramsdale gets accused of, and I think Ramsdale's been terrific this season, probably in the top two or three goalkeepers in the league at the very least, but is he's probably handling from crosses. Sometimes people say, you know, he gets bullied a little bit. You know, obviously saw the one earlier in the season against Villa, for example, that went in directly to the goal. This was an error, Neil, right? And he'll be kicking himself a little bit for that. At least it didn't cost us, but it was an error, wasn't it?
He'll be the first to admit it was his fault. Without a question in my mind, he's that kind of character. He'll take it on the chin, and he'll learn from it. you've got to remember, he's still a young guy. For a keeper, he's 24, ridiculous.
Yeah, very young.
He's in diapers as far as a keeper's concerned. And let's not forget the saves he did make. You mentioned the one where it came off his foot from Rashford, and you know he makes great saves. He keeps us in the game. He has done so many times, and they're worth 3 points. Sometimes great saves are worth 3 points.
It's just like last week, yeah.
And he'll learn from it. He'll learn from it, guys. Honestly, let's not worry about a mistake that he might make. You know, as I said, great players will make mistakes. They all do. Even Henry would have made mistakes. Bergkamp might. I mean, it's difficult now to think of that when you look back on those great players. But they did, and they do. And there's not going to be no difference in this current squad. Even as well as we're doing, we're still going to see errors, even going forward for the rest of the season. We are, but what my point is we are doing so much more to kind of counteract them, and we're still coming out on top. Guys, we've lost one game all season, only drawn two. It's unbelievable. Who would have thought? Even me, Mr. Positive, didn't see that coming at the start of the season, to be on 50 points at the halfway stage. We're just doing too much. I think there's too much within us to mitigate it all. And I think Ramsdale will acknowledge it, and he'll learn from it. I promise you, he will. And in a way, sometimes if it's not to the detriment of the result, these errors are good in a way, because it's you know that you're not infallible. There are still areas to work on, and then you can overcome them. So I think if you're always perfect, Jack, you're never going to know or experience a time where it could all go wrong and it's like a big shock. So these happening now and again and creeping into the game is a good thing, because the manager can get together with the team as a collective, and then the manager and all the coaches can get together with the individuals, as we saw in that documentary, and then say, like, right, what do you think went wrong here, and what can we do going forward? And Ramsdale will correct it. Believe me, he'll overcome it. Yeah. He'll correct it, and we won't see it. So
Neil, you know what I love about the...
I'm not concerned at all.
Yeah, Neil, you know what I love about the errors that we made? Or we make, I would say, for the most part, is like you see Ramsdale's error, right, Neil? And he's coming to claim the ball off of his line, be aggressive, and really release us on a counterattack, right? I mean, how many times have we seen keepers kind of get stuck in between coming for the ball, staying on their line? They're stuck in no man's land. You know, they're indecisive, they're unsure, or, you know, they're just overall passive and they stay on their line and we get bullied in the box or something. And Thomas Partey's trying to play a long ball, be progressive, release whoever he was trying to play out on the wing. I'm not quite sure. Maybe he's trying to put Eddie down the channel for their first goal. It's just you see the difference in when we make mistakes this season. It's at the expense of trying to be expansive and trying to play good football, as opposed to when in seasons past we would be making mistakes like passing the ball backwards or recycling the ball or being negative or just overall not really having an identity or a game plan or overall just being passive and weak. And that was unacceptable for the standards that are expected at Arsenal Football Club. And you're totally right, Neil. Like I think the insight with the Amazon documentary was very, it was super insightful, for lack of better words. The insight was super insightful. But to see how these players are being managed by these different levels of coaching and the one-on-ones and really kind of getting into the mind of the player to help them develop. And we're seeing the fruits of that labor right now. You know, that's really, they're giving us insight from a season ago. And we're just seeing these guys are really building these guys up. You're a great footballer. You're a good player. You're better than this. You've made these decisions 100 times. Go out them and make them 100 more times. And they're just reinstilling that mindset to the point where that is the default now. And errors are going to happen. And at least they're happening in a positive way, for lack of a better way of putting it. You know what I mean?
And they're owning it. You know, it's not Mustafi putting his hands up saying, you know.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? They're owning it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And look, if you look at the table, it doesn't lie. We've got the second best defensive record. So that's a testament to the defenders and the goalkeeper, and that's only second to Newcastle, who are playing with a wall in front of their net. Mm-hmm. So yeah. You know,
they don't move out of their own half. Yeah,
right. At least we're playing positive good football. That's what I like. Another change in us, guys. We're not just winning. We're winning well. We're winning with performances.
Yeah.
It's not like we're doing a boring, oh, let's just sit back and just count and hopefully we'll get one lucky goal. We want to win with style and panache and sexy football. And sorry, Newcastle, as much as they progressed, they're not doing that. I mean, Dave, how many draws have they had? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, no, exactly. six or nine, something like that.
Yeah,
like,
a lot. So there you go.
So, yeah, a lot.
There you go.
Yeah, and I just think you saw how positive we were. Ten Hag makes a substitution to bring off a striker and brings Fred on, I think, which again plays, I think, into our hands where we just say, well, they're playing for the draw here.
Yeah.
You saw the time wasting from them. De Gea was pathetic.
I hope he's okay. I mean,
yeah,
that looked brutal, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't to the level and the sort of collective time wasting of Newcastle where their coaches were even doing it by throwing balls away and stuff. But they're individual players. I think what's really come out of this is there's always going to be a narrative from the game, but is this sort of, oh, United are these plucky sort of newcomers up to the club, top of the league. I was like, these are like £200 million worth of defenders here that are, you know, time wasting and kicking. These are like the top defenders they could have bought. And they've got, you know, £100 million worth of ones like Harry Maguire on the bench. I mean, this isn't plucky newcomers time, right? I mean, these are guys, and when you see sort of De Gea wasting time, that plays into us, and you look at that and go, wow, they are desperate to get out of here with a draw. And I think what was fantastic about this was the reaction would have been so different from the media specifically, not from us necessarily, if they had got the draw. It would have been very much, oh, United get a fantastic away point. They're still in it after playing a hard midweek game. You know, deserve it. They hung in there.
Title chase is on. Yeah,
exactly. And although deep down we know that this was a game that probably should have been over before it got to 2-2, it was such a sense of sort of relief and justification when that goal went in. How were you, Garrett, when the goal went in? Because personally, when the goal went in the 89th minute from Eddie, I didn't celebrate. I couldn't celebrate because I just felt it looked off. Something looked off to me. I was like, I don't know who's off, but something felt off to me. And I kind of sat there, and you guys are back in England are about 30 seconds ahead of me. So I was like, should I check it? I was like, no, I won't check it. I'll just sit. I was like, they're celebrating. And I was like, and I didn't scream or anything. Like, usually I'm screaming when Arsenal score. I didn't scream or anything. And at that point, I decided to check my phone. And I saw a lot of stuff saying, var, var, var. And I went, I think it's off. And even by seeing it, I thought it might be off because you just couldn't tell. But then I actually saw on the text from James, I think it was. It was like, it's a goal. And I was like, then I released it. But imagine, Garrett, being in the stadium for that. It was like a double celebration almost.
Gosh.
I can't imagine that.
The anxiety levels must have been palatable. I mean, like, I always feel like we're just, like, waiting to be hard done by VAR every single match. Even if it's a bang-on goal, I just feel like they're looking for some angle where a guy's pinky toenail is obviously offside with all the lines and everything they're putting all over the place. And it was hard to celebrate because, and the shame is like the goal goes in. It should be a moment that is just like absolute elation and exuberation and all this other superlatives. And all I'm doing is looking at the sideline official. And all I'm doing is looking at the referee to see if he's, you know, going to the box or pointing to the circle or what it's going to be. And not to say it took away from the celebrations, because you could see the limbs in the stadium, especially from the television coverage. I mean, it was absolute chaos, it looked like. But, I mean, for me personally, I was just waiting for someone to take it away from us. I don't know why. I think I'm scarred too deep from seasons past, but
that was the same.
Such a fantastic way to put a cap on a dominant performance, because it was just another moment that embodied the way that we want to play football. And Trossard's involvement when that was great. He had that like nice little slip pass down the line that released. I believe it was Zinchenko that pulled it across. And
yeah,
little bit of luck with, I think, the touch from Fred. And was it Xhaka that maybe put it onto him? And then
it was Odegaard, I think, took the
Odegaard, you're right,
shot. Yeah. It deflected, yeah.
Deflected. And then that is not an easy finish by any means. And it's super instinctive. And you can say he's in the right spot at the right time. But I mean, how many times are you going to say that about Eddie? He's always in the right spot at the right time.
I thought it was fantastic improvisation. Yeah.
Yeah. And to be onside is another testament to his ability to and his awareness.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so easy for a player just to continue his run and keep going with that and stay and take himself out of the game. And he's aware enough, experienced enough, to know when he needs to halt his run, be available, be in a position where he can make that ultimate touch. And it's fantastic. I'd have been gutted if it didn't count. Absolutely gutted.
Yeah, I would have been absolutely devastated. Yeah, and I kind of celebrated as the VAR released, and it looked like the fans celebrated once again.
But I'm always waiting to hear the roar, because the screen will tell you it's a goal in the stadium before they announce it. So I'm always waiting to hear the roar of the stadium, and it just... I was so relieved.
Yeah.
And it was deserved. It was deserved.
Yeah, and that's what was amazing. It wasn't like you got a goal against the runner player or anything. It was relentless attacking pressure from us, suffocating them, dropping them deeper and deeper into the area. And if you keep putting the balls in the area, eventually they're going to make an error. Or they're going to
in their box.
63 touches, which is the most I think we've had against any team in the league this season. I'm
most say, anyone's sister. Had.
Anyone's most, had. Most anyone's team, had. Team. Neil, obviously Zinchenko played a huge role in that final goal and in the final minutes in terms of just driving us forward. You saw Saliba at the end basically just pointing to him and saying, yeah, you're like, I see now, if you didn't before, but you're unbelievable, you know. How did they sell him to us? I don't understand it. Do you know what's fantastic about this, Neil? Is we talked last week, me, you, and Garrett, about Plan Bs. Right? We weren't down, but we talked about the transfer window and where do we go from here, and will we do anything? And in theory, Zinchenko's our Plan B, and the other one was the guy that scored the equaliser for them. And I watched Lisandro Martinez, and whilst I think he's a good player, he's not a 65 million worth player, but he's a good player. And we would have played him in a different role, I presume, in this sort of left back role. He's not Zinchenko, though. I mean, he's technically not anywhere near the level of Zinchenko, I don't think. He's a bit of a hothead, Lisandro Martinez, got that sort of Argentinian, way about him. But he's a good defender, but Zinchenko's just redefining everything I thought of, in terms of what a left back can do. But he's just technically so good. But what we didn't see and what you couldn't put numbers on was his leadership and his ability to bring something out of the group that wasn't there. And I thought his comments after the game were just fantastic on saying, you know, the players were talking about third and fourth this season. He was like, no, that's not what we need to be talking about, you know, winning titles. And I haven't looked at the data, but I don't know how in all of his four title wins, how many games, for example, he started for Man City in those title wins. I want to say maybe, you know, there must have been one season there where he was their main left back, but it always felt like maybe he was on the fringes a little bit more, maybe. I don't want to say, I know he only started like 10 games for them last season, but I don't understand how they sold him to us now. Even if they didn't think he was a threat, I don't really understand why they sold him. I'm sure Pep's, you know, he's far cleverer than we are, but I am stunned by it the more I watch him now.
So Pep's an Arsenal fan. He wanted to manage Arsenal. That's why he sold him to us. Come on, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining. I did think, though, I was like, he is another level, this guy.
It's mind-blowing that he's not... that he's on our team. I mean, it is crazy to think like that.
Yeah, some people say in the sign-in of the window, Neil, but yeah, amazing.
I think he's going to become, as evidence of it now, probably one of our most significant signings in years. I really believe it because of what you just said. It's not just his ability of what he does on the pitch. It's his attitude. It's his leadership. He's been scolded for over celebrating. I mean, oh my God, just shut the hell up. Let the guy be passionate. I love that in our, any sport I watch, I love passion. I love it. It's so
exciting, so
exhilarating to see, you know, the feelings that just come out, you know, when you get a winner in whatever it is, whether it's an individual sport or a team sport. It's just so important to see that. And I hate people who get chastised for it. No, you've got to be a bit more professional. Shut up. I mean, Jesus, what are you talking about? You don't know how hard some of these individuals work their whole lives to get to that moment. So you need to keep your mouth shut, because you sitting on your ass behind a screen have no idea. So I'm all for all of this exuberance and the celebrations and things, especially at the end of the match, just to digress a little bit. What I saw at the end made me tear up. It made me tear up. That's how emotional I was. And the best part was Jesus hugging Eddie, because that tells me so much about Arteta and what he's done at that club. Kudos to Arteta. He's made everyone feel that they are a part of this club, a part of his vision. And whether they play every game, every minute of every game, or they're playing bit parts, yeah, and they've all, you know, they're all bought into this vision, all of them. And Jesus hugging Eddie, it's not like it's like, you know, oh no, I'm worried now, or you're playing what I should be doing. He's genuinely happy for the man. And that's what made me tear up. It really did. I was gobsmacked. I was a bit like you as well with the third goal, Jack. I was in silent. I just stood because I thought, they're going to rule it out. I know they're going to rule it out. My mum's going, my mum, she's going mad next to me. She's going, we've won. I'm like, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
wait. And yeah, that's what Zinchenko, I was like.
So, geez, going back to Zinchenko, what, he's on a different planet. What? He's not. I mean, I know he was all over the pitch, but it was so significant when that heat map came up, appeared on Twitter and all over the place. What are you talking about? You're right. It's like chicken pox. He was everywhere.
That's what it was. It was chicken pox.
He was absolutely everywhere. I mean, he could have filled in for Ramsdale if he wanted to. I mean, the energy levels of the guy, and I think, you know what, he really, I mean, am I right in saying he's always been an Arsenal supporter? And I think it's really coming out now that he's not only playing football consistently, which maybe he wasn't getting the chance to do so at Man City, but he's playing for the club that he loves. And I think that's why he was probably so keen to get his mate in. You know, he was so for it. And he was advocating that, you know, he needs to come in and play for this team. But you know what? Having quick one on that, I'm now glad that we haven't got him, because number one, the wages that he would have been on, I think would have probably upset some of the players that are already there and are doing it. And they're thinking, hang on a minute, how can this guy come in who's only played a handful of games for his current club and now he's on massive wages? I don't think that would have been the Arsenal way anyway. But also, on top of that, guys, the fact that Trossard has got a little bit of seniority to him, he's a little bit older, I think we need that balance, because we are generally a very young team. And I think that's Arteta's vision. He just wants to bring youth into this team. But we need to have a few senior players. I mean, Xhaka, bless him, as brilliant as he's been, and he's one of my star players this season, as brilliant as he's been, how many more years has he got left? Whereas I think Trossard will be there for a while. And, you know, I'll tell you what, he looks so silky, so comfortable. He looks such an Arsenal player within the second he walked on that pitch. And I've got a feeling, speaking of Zinchenko, him and Zinchenko, when they play together, are going to link up really well. I've just got this feeling.
He had a great 10-minute cameo, I thought.
Yes. I think very what positive. A clever, astute signing that was.
Yeah.
And that the other guy now is a distant memory. Don't care now. Don't even care. I just think, God, he's going to add so much. He's going to be significant as well for me this season. But Zinchenko, there's nothing much. Like Saka, we've run out of things to say about the lad. Zinchenko's another one.
Yeah.
What a team we've got. What a team. Unbelievable.
Fantastic. Gareth, you want to add on? We mentioned Trossard. Last week we didn't know if we were going to sign anybody. Obviously, we knew we missed out on Mudryk, but we did mention Trossard on the podcast, not necessarily saying it was going to be the one, but maybe one to watch. But it is a very different way of going about it after our previous. But I think it's the reason we mentioned it was because it was hard to see us sort of throwing big money once again on a player without really doing our due diligence and evaluating where that money goes, right? Because we have to be careful when we spend, you know, that amount of money. We can't be like Chelsea and spend it one day and then spend it again the next day and so on. Which I think is really clever. If you look at Liverpool, I keep going back to Liverpool and Chelsea, but if you look at Liverpool, I think they've been a bit lazy in their spending over the last 12 months. Like, I think Nunes, while he might come good, I think Nunes and Gakpo aren't really Klopp-like signings from his early era. Like, certainly I don't think Gakpo is. And they're, you know, that's 130 million worth of two players there. And they can't afford, unless they change ownership, but they can't afford to make those errors. And we can't afford to make those errors either. So I think it's a really shrewd purchase, but it is a very different one, Garrett. So I just wonder what your thoughts are on what Trossard can offer us for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know everything about the guy, but when he did suit up and come onto the pitch and carry the ball, and he had that bit about him that made me think, oh, this guy is he's an Arsenal player. He plays like we want players to play. He carries the ball. He's got smooth first touch, good vision, calm on the ball. You know, those are like, and I hate to speak negatively about Pepe because I don't think he ever was set up to succeed. But I never felt that about Pepe. I never felt Pepe was an Arsenal player. I felt he was a talented player, but I never felt like he had what we expect out of a player. And Trossard only was on for 10 minutes, but you could see glimpses of what it was that made him stick out, stand out. And you know what else I like about him is if you look at his scoring record against the big clubs, I mean, it's phenomenal. So there's that aspect to him as well. The seniority, he's 28. Seniority is, gosh, makes me feel old just thinking about it. But
it's, think how Neil feels.
But it's something to be said about the makeup of this team and finding a guy that's a little bit on the older side of the playing squad with his clinical ability in big games against big opponents. And then again, his ability to come and fill in and just be influential and then have Zinchenko next to him, I think is going to really set us up positively for the rest of the season. And then what was the final fee? 27 million?
Yeah, just under. Maybe we could
something like
25,
that.
Something.
I mean, we're talking a quarter of what we were preparing to commit for a player who hasn't done it in the Premier League. And I'm sure he'll be a fine player. He's got all of the promising attributes that you can imagine. But That's not what we want to do. That's not how we've ever done things. No. And now we've got, sure, we showed our hand a little bit in terms of what we're willing to push out there in January in terms of overall spending. But I think you see some of the players that we're linked with again throughout this week and the end of last week and our newest signing, the defender. Well, I'm also going to not pretend like I know anything about him, but everything's...
Leads us to
believe that he's been promising in Serie A and will be a good player. I have every belief that Edu and Arteta and the decisions that they're making. So, you know, good for him. And I hope he's very successful. But you can see, you know, I saw some links to Weston McKennie with Juventus today, which I think would be a fantastic signing. And you see other, but they're all around that 20, 25, young to youngish. That makes more sense. You know, we can't be doing what Liverpool and Chelsea are doing because it's not responsible.
Yeah. And I think we transitioned really well, which is something I didn't think we may do this window. I turned it really quick, huh? Yeah. And I think basically what we did was we said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to move a few deals that we were planning to do in the summer. And we're going to bring those forward because we were expecting just basically to play out all on one player for January and do nothing else. But now maybe we can do two or three smaller things. And I think that's what we've done. The centre-back one is something we probably were expecting in the summer, the left centre-back to back up Gabriel, but we've moved that forward. There's been a full-back link as well. It looks like we're looking for a inverted fullback on the other side, which is probably hinting at us probably losing one or two fullbacks in the, obviously Cedric's going to go and maybe watching where Nuno Tavares and maybe even possibly Tierney go in the summer. So we'll see if we do that this window. The links to the midfielder are very interesting because I expect in my head, I expect Lokonga and Elneny to move on. by the summer, and whether it's a loan or obviously Elneny will be a permanent deal. So I expect we need two central midfielders. I think a lot of us believe one of those will be a big money spend out. You know, you've seen the links to Declan Rice and Saicedo and other players. But one of them I expect will be kind of like a depth management player to raise the floor of the central midfield team. And I'm wondering if that's what we're looking at this window. Are we looking to bring that player in, maybe if we happen to lose Lokonga on loan this window, or there's not really been much talk about that, but or just bring that player in early because we know we're not going to necessarily use a player like Lokonga that much for the rest of the season. I find it difficult to believe we'll use Lokonga much for the rest of the season unless there's an injury crisis. But so I wonder, I would love to see us do that central midfield player. I don't know who it would be, but
yeah,
it'd be really, really good. But again, very, very good to see us get Trossard in. Just before we go, just Neil, so we do a little prediction for the FA Cup. And if you do have a prediction, I just want a quick prediction from both of you on how strong or how much rotation you think we do. It's a Friday game. I don't believe we have another game for 8 days after it. So it's in a position where if Arteta wants to go strong, which I kind of expect that he will, he could do without, you know, games racking up. It's not like there were, you know, we've got games just kind of falling in a decent area. But of course, you know, the priority isn't probably the domestic cups this year, but I just wonder what your thoughts are, Neil, and how we should approach it.
I'm racking my brains on this one because obviously the Premiership is the pinnacle, even I'd say even more significant than something like the Champions League, because it's 38 games, it's utter consistency. So surely now that has to be our priority, because I don't think even Arteta may have expected us to be in the position we're in. We've got a great opportunity. We can't let it go. However, having said that, personally for me, I love the FA Cup. We're the record holders in it. But it's not just about what it is. It's the momentum. I wouldn't want to go to Man City and get hammered because we've made wholesome changes. We have to go to Man City. And even if we don't come out on the right side, give a performance that will make them work for a win. That's all I want. I want to see them work for a win if they're to win it. But there's no reason why we can't win it. I think there'll be some changes. I think that... But Arteta won't want that. He won't want to go in on a whimper. I don't think he would. I think what worries me slightly is the team that we put out against Oxford should have on paper been good enough to see us through, and it wasn't, and we had to bring the seniors on. That's what must my worry. But I think even from then, we've matured. Even from that short time ago, we've already matured and we've come some way forward. I can see maybe three to four changes. I can see potentially. I know, I don't think you agreed with this, but I think the goalkeeper may change.
I'm 50-50 on it. I'm 50-50 on it, whether he does.
Yeah. Trossard, I think, will play. He's got to.
I think he will play Trossard, yeah.
You know, I think Trossard will play. Tomiyasu, which isn't kind of a change, but it is, because Ben White, I guess, is the main man now there. So Tomiyasu certainly will play. And I think he might field... He might change for other defenders, central defenders as well. So we might see Holding come in. He might even give a berth to this new guy. I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about him. Certainly he might be on the bench to come on. Who knows? But yeah, and then maybe the midfield, he might dress one of Partey or Xhaka. I'd probably say Partey rather than Xhaka.
I think he'll play both of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he'll play both of them.
Possibly.
I don't think he'll play a change centre-backs either,
But then it's a bit of a conundrum, isn't it, Jack? Because if he makes too many changes and it comes off bad for us, I don't know whether that's a good signal or a good statement. I mean, he still needs to make a statement of intent, even though it's not the Premiership. And as I said, good performance all day long. Yeah. But if you want a prediction, 2-1, Zinchenko. For me, Welbeck scoring when he went back to Old Trafford. Zinchenko will go back. And Zinchenko scoring the winner in a 2-1 win.
Mm. Wowza. Okay, Garrett, what's your thoughts? Do you agree with that sort of rotation? You think it'd be less, more? How significant do you think it is going up against our possible title rivals for the first time this season, even if it is in a cup?
I think it's important. It's an important fixture, no matter how you slice it. FA Cup, Premier League, League Cup, it doesn't really matter. It's the opponent that is important, and it's the context of the time at which we're playing them too. You know, we can't just put our tail between our legs and say, this doesn't matter to us, we'll see you in the Premier League that's not the standard anymore. I'm stuck in two minds because I think it makes sense to rotate, but at the same time, I've heard Mikel Arteta say himself that big clubs play multiple games a week, big players play multiple games a week, and that's why they're here. So that's what they should expect. So I'm stuck in two minds of like, oh, he'll just swap out Matt Turner and Ramsdale and he'll play the strong 11. And then see what goes on and then, you know, be more open to early rotation or, you know, maximum rotation, five subs or whatever. But then at the same time, you know, you do have to squad manage. Like if I was Kieran Tierney and Tomiyasu, I would be very frustrated, but itching to prove myself. Very frustrated if I didn't get on for this from the start and very motivated to prove myself, I should say. So I think he has to manage that as well, which is the only real reason why I think he would rotate is just man management. Cause I know he wants to play our strongest 11 every single week, every single game. Yeah. You know, that's kind of the standard that he's established. But if I'm going to put it out on a limb, I'd say he's going to rotate the goalkeeper. I'd say he's going to rotate either fullback. I think both center backs start. I think both of our strongest midfielders start. As much as I don't want to see Partey play another game, I want him to be preserved, but I think he starts with Xhaka. And then
no, Elneny's not even fit. Sorry, carrying you.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah,
so yeah, he's not even being in squad.
That makes sense. Trossard will probably start on the left. Martinelli come out. And then I think Saka and Odegaard will play. And then I don't think we have a choice but to play Eddie up top. So I think, by the way, I see it's three or four.
What's your prediction for the score?
I'll give us a prediction. It's hard to put my neck out there, especially because, and if we draw on this one, is it a replay?
It's a replay. I think it is a replay. Replay now. It's not.
I think I'll go 1-1 draw on this one, unfortunately, and add another fixture to the schedule. And I do think City will go out on top, but we will ultimately dominate the game and find a way to peg it back and take it back to the Emirates for a second leg. That's my prediction. And I think our goal scorer will be, I'll say Saka. He's on fire.
Yeah.
Is it a replay? You guys sure?
I don't know. In the League Cup, it would be at this stage. Am I right? So in the FA Cup, well, the third round there was replays, Neil. Yeah, because Liverpool played Wolves and drew 2-2, and then played them again. So I presume the fourth round is exactly the same. I could be wrong, but I think it's the same. I think
we don't want the extra match. We're going to go and win. Come on, Garrett.
I know. I would love to assume 3-1 wins every single week, but I can't do it. I just can't do it.
Yeah. I agree with most of your points. I think I'm going to probably go one. I think we'll rotate even less than maybe even what both of you saying. I think when we've rotated both fullbacks, we've not looked very good at the same time. So I think he'll rotate one. And I probably would say it would be Tomiyasu after his 45-minute display in midweek, which will frustrate Tierney again. But I think he might not even start Tierney in this one, especially with Zinchenko going back to his old club. I just wonder. I think he might play him again, which is a risk. But again, I think he will. I see two changes. I see Trossard, Tomiyasu coming in. And I'm very 50-50 on the goalkeeper. He could well play Matt Turner, who's looked very good in his appearances recently. So I wouldn't be surprised if he plays Matt Turner there. But yeah, maybe three changes tops, I would say, for him. But I'll go, oh, screw it. I'll go 3-2 win. 3-2 win. I'm not going to lose on the old 3-2
back
mark
to back
again.
3-2 against Manchester Club. 3-2. Wow.
3-2 win. Eddie to score. And I'll go 3-2 win. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see it.
I'm excited.
Been a long time since we played them, so let's see. Let's put ourselves up against them and see what we've got. You know,
we do have some wrongs to right against Manchester City, that's for sure. And I feel like we've put to rest our problems against Manchester United this week. They've been a thorn in our side, like a bogey team, every single season for whatever reason. So hopefully we can keep that momentum going.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully, we'll be back for another post-game one post-Friday. We'll see what timings are like because, you know, we don't play on Fridays very often. And I think that'll be, you know, the last one before the transfer window ends. It's very nice to walk into the last week of the transfer window and not you know, if you get something, great, but not think you absolutely need something. Isn't that, oh, I think that's really nice, right? I mean, we could have been thinking that way if Trossard hasn't come in, but really, it's not to the levels we've been at previous years where we've been walking in and going, oh, God, we've got to do a couple of deals otherwise season's over and that kind of stuff. Look at us last January, right, and what happened. So the credit to the club for doing deals early, but also for how they progressed the squad and kind of
made us feel.
I think
it'd be nice to get a midfielder on loan. I think it'd be nice, especially if Elneny's injured at the moment.
Yeah, well, there's already been... I mean, they've shut it down straight away, but we've again been linked to Camavinga on loan for Real Madrid, but they've shut that one down. They're not going to let him go. But I do wonder if come, because we've been linked to Camavinga for about 2 years, but if come the summer, it could be another Odegaard situation again where, you know, if they're bringing in a Jude Bellingham, for example, maybe that player comes full circle. We know he's a big Arsenal fan. He don't want to be at Real Madrid. Why would you want to be there anymore? You want to come to Arsenal, don't you? So, he's got pictures of us in it on his wall. He's a young French player. He's been watching Thierry Henry all his life. So he wants to be an Arsenal player. But, it'd be very, yeah, I would love that. It's just, where do you find that deal? Maybe it is a Weston McKinney. Basically, I think what we're looking at is, can we find someone that can offer a lot more than a Lokonga can for the next 6 months? So I agree with you. It'd be fantastic to do that. Just add a little bit to the squad, because you don't know what's going to happen, do you? So, boys, it's been great chatting. Sorry I kept you a few minutes overboard. We're at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter and Purely Arsenal on YouTube. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you want to find us. And we'll be back after smashing City in the FA Cup. Let's go. Up the Arsenal, boys. Stay top. Keep it lucky. Come on.